carries in, scores! Patrick Laine snaps it. What a goal by Laine.
Gonna throw this one in the trash and move on. That's not obviously the way you want to start.
Shooting top of Hellebuck. Rebound is out of the net. Stopped by Hellebuck. Key saves for Connor Hellebuck.
Totten score. Sidney Crosby.
As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right.
Stand by highlight. Stand by host. You big boys.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Miles, everyone.
With Drew Mendel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manouk.
And cue the little criminal.
On your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning, a very busy Saturday on the Winnipeg sports calendar. The Jets and the Hurricanes, we know that puck drop is 6 p.m. tonight at Bell MTS Place, a game you can, of course, hear live on TSN 1290. But the Bombers also in action this afternoon. Minuk Denture Clinic, Blue Bomber game day. That's going to be following us at 1 o'clock this afternoon. So a very busy Saturday in the sports world here in Winnipeg. And keep your radio tuned to TSN 1290 for all of the latest. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mendel. We welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. We got some Manitoba Moose news and audio there after last night's Moose home opener. That's available on our website, IllegalCurve.com. I say good morning to you, gentlemen. Nice to see you both on this Saturday morning. Ezzy, nice to see you. I saw you on, of course, Wednesday for midweek, but it is nice to have you back in the studio on a Saturday after last week's brief stint on the injured reserve.
Yeah, it's definitely good to be back. I love the early start, by the way.
The early start of what?
The Jets game. The 6 o'clock start.
As opposed to the 9 o'clock start?
Well, the 7 o'clock start is usually the time that we see during the week. Saturday, but I'm just saying the 6 o'clock start I prefer because it makes you think back to the first couple of years, Dave, when the Jets were in the Southeast Division and you used to really have to just hustle from your on the way to work. Sorry, I should say you hustle from work on the way to the game. So I like the early start because you have a lot more time to go out after.
There you go. And that's always your priority is, you know, going out after the game.
Well,
As he likes to party.
It's a Saturday. I understand what you're saying.
Not as much as I used to.
No, you're much more of a homebody now that you're a married man and everything. You're no longer on the prowl. You've been tamed accordingly.
Well, on the prowl, that makes me seem like a predator, Drew. Let's just settle down a little bit.
I meant that in the non-predator, non-creepy way. How about that?
All right, that's fine.
Okay, Dave, good to see you on the Saturday morning as well.
Thanks, Drew.
Yes.
Feel good to be here.
That's good, yes. I can see the excitement is just oozing out of your pores at the moment. Let's get started with looking back at the Winnipeg Jets road trip. The road trip concluded on Thursday night in Vancouver. It's amazing how, the sky was falling, pretty much, after the Flames-Jets game last Saturday night, and how things are much more calm now. Following those two back-to-back road victories on that road trip, a successful road trip, a 2-1 road trip, and the Jets come home tonight, start a 3-game homestand against the Carolina Hurricanes, and then, of course, you have the Columbus Blue Jackets on Tuesday night and the Minnesota Wild on Friday night. So things a lot more calm in Winnipeg Jets land after the back-to-back victories on the road, including Thursday night in Vancouver, a game that I think would be safe to say was not one that's going to go into the Hall of Fame for great hockey, but the Jets don't care about that. The Jets care about the fact they got 2 points and battled hard on a night that they really weren't. I mean, neither team was great, but the Jets weren't terrific on Thursday night.
Right, and as you said, Drew, it was a clean 2 points, and the Vancouver Canucks made it difficult for the Jets there in the third period. Chris Tanev scores on that knuckle puck. That's been talked about quite a bit on the station, and, they almost tied that game up. Uh-huh. And, the Jets, I thought, played a good 40 to 45 minutes of that game, but, the Canucks outshot the Jets pretty badly in those last two periods. And, you got to give a lot of credit to the Brian Little line because Scheifele, Ehlers, and Wheeler, after scoring 10 points against the Edmonton Oilers, they didn't have much going. And you mentioned it wasn't the best hockey game. And can you guys count how many odd man chances there were in that game. Like, I can count maybe one or two. I don't think there was a breakaway in that game, and if there was a breakaway, it was only one breakaway. So it was a very tight checking game, and you know, got to give the Vancouver Canucks a lot of credit. It's only been three games here, but Travis Green has done a really good job with this group, and we know that Travis Green, he was not only a good hockey player, but he was a good coach at the American Hockey League level and at the Western Hockey League level, so he's done a really good job. It's early here, and you know, they have a lot of work to do if they want to become a playoff team, and they're a very young team, but give the Canucks a lot of credit. I thought that was Tyler Myers' best game of the season, and not just because he scored the winning goal, but because he played almost 25 minutes, and he looked like the old Tyler Myers, right? And we didn't see a lot of him last year, so you got to give Myers a lot of credit, and Dmitry Kulikov, guys. Dmitry Kulikov's last two games have been far superior to the previous two games, right? So Brian Little was excellent, Tyler Myers and Dmitry Kulikov were excellent, and how can you not mention Connor Hellebuck, because he was excellent, especially in the third.
Yeah, I thought Connor Hellebuck, his last two games, well, the two games that he's played so far, I think he had a 9.49 and a 9.38 save percentage both those two games, and he's been very good, especially, obviously, in that first period of the Edmonton game where he kind of stood tall for the Jets and really kept them in the game and allowed them to kind of hold the fort until they could kind of take over in terms of offense. So Connor Hellebuck, no question, it's an interesting question leading into this game is to who you go with. Do you go with Steve Mason, obviously, or do you go with Connor Hellebuck? Ride that hot hand. But
it's an answer we'll know in about probably an hour's time or so when the Jets hit the ice for their pregame skate, of course.
Yeah, how do you not go back to Hellebuck, Dave?
I don't know, because maybe you want to get Mason some confidence. Or look, don't get me wrong. I would use Hellebuck again because I think you need the points and you don't worry about the confidence and you let Mason play maybe his old team and on Tuesday, and then you move forward with Hellebuck. Like I said, the way Hellebuck's playing right now, he deserves to be in the net, and that's my feeling. And especially considering how drawn out these games are, there's no worry of fatigue. I mean, the team flew in yesterday, so obviously they didn't rush home after the game. They stayed in Vancouver. They flew home Friday afternoon, so they were well rested.
That's what the sleep studies that the team. It used to be you'd leave right after the game and sort of take the red eye,
right?
And then the sleep studies that a lot of these teams now invest in have suggested that you're better off when you can do it, depending on the schedule, of course. You're better off having a good night's sleep in Vancouver and flying during the day so that it doesn't, I guess, I don't know, your circadian rhythms or whatever.
Whoa, circadian rhythms. I mean, did you do a sleep apnea study? Like, I'm confused.
No, that's the man in the middle is the one with the sleep apnea.
Well, I was going to say, do any Jets use a CPAP machine?
I doubt it. I think that's usually restricted for, you know, some...
Well, if they have sleep apnea.
I don't think that they'd have sleep apnea. They're fine-tuned athletes.
Well, I know I'm a little heavier than your average Jet, Drew, but you never know. I mean, there could be one or two players.
Well, the one thing the Jets are still lacking, though, is the scoring from the second and third lines. Third and fourth lines.
Nice transition there, by the way, Drew.
So I just look at it and I think to myself, like, you know, they don't have any even strength goals or points even, I don't think, from the third and fourth lines. And right now that's just not good. You need to have more balanced scoring, which is the big thing from, you know, you see a majority of teams, you know, we saw that with the Leafs where they had those three lines rolling. So that's one thing Winnipeg definitely needs is a little more production from those bottom two lines. Preferably, you know, you get into a mode where you have three lines going, and of course your fourth line occasionally contributing.
Kopp has an assist. Tanev has a goal. Other than that that's all you've got.
Yeah, but Kopp's assist was shorthanded, and Tanev's goal was shorthanded.
Right.
So I'm saying, so those are both, like, they're not
five on five. Yeah. They've been useless.
Yeah. Well, Dave, I think you really want especially more production from that third line, which is currently Adam Lowry, Sean Mathias, and Nick Petan, right? And I think, you know, that line has been effective more so in a defensive checking role, but offensively, as you said, they haven't produced much, and you wonder, guys, if we're going to see Joel Armia tonight.
I wouldn't surprise me if you see Joel Armia. I mean, Marco Dano only played, you know, 5 minutes and 46 seconds in Vancouver.
He has not been good this season.
No, well, so
that penalty against Marcus Granlund made no sense. Like, I was like, Kulikov had the angle.
Yeah, why did he take that penalty?
It just didn't make any sense why he took that
penalty. Drew, I'm not sure right now why Armia is not in the lineup.
I would assume Armia took the pregame skate in Vancouver, and I would assume that that's sort of an indicator given the way Dano played, of course, in Vancouver. And
but I think that was more health-related. I don't think that was...
I agree. Yeah. But I think given what you saw from Dano, you know, the last couple games, which has been effectively, you know, not a ton in terms of on-ice performance, I'm not sure why you wouldn't go back to Armia. At least you've seen Armia in
spurts. Well, he wasn't happy. I mean, the truth is he wasn't happy. Coach Maurice said after one of the practices, he essentially said that Armia was not at the speed he needed to be at, basically attributed to, you know, the injury during preseason, saying that he never really was at 100%. And I'm paraphrasing, obviously. Mm-hmm. And that it just kind of showed in that his speed wasn't there and he needed to, you know, kind of get up to speed, no pun intended.
Well, I can see that, but what has Marco Dano done so far this season?
Nothing. He is not deserving. I mean, he's had his opportunity the last couple games, and I think it's time now. I mean, I think it's time that you switch out Marco Dano probably for Joel Armia. Now, if I had my druthers, I'd be switching out Kyle Connor for somebody else as well. I'd be getting Connor back in the lineup because you just can't continue, to Dave's point, with a bottom six that doesn't provide you with anything 5-on-5.
Well, I wouldn't say they aren't providing anything 5-on-5, but the reality is right now you only have two scoring lines on this team,
mm-hmm.
right? And we expect the third line to eventually, I mean, again, it's only been four games. So, you know, you have to repeat that a couple times. It's not like we're halfway through the season here or 20 games into the year. So, I mean, I think that line is going to start to produce. I think Adam Lowry has played pretty well. You know, he's looked good on the power play. But I just don't think you've been getting enough offense, as you said, from a lot of individual players. I mean, Brandon Tanev, I actually think, guys, has played really well.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we talked about, you know, Brandon Tanev essentially made the team over Kyle Connor. You know, Brandon Tanev and Nick Batan making the team over Kyle Connor, if you want to look at it like that. And, obviously, with the Matt Hendricks injury, there was an opportunity for some of these guys to make the team. But when you look at, you know, the Brian Little line was the line that was driving the bus offensively last game, and then obviously the game Monday night against Edmonton, it was Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, and Nikolai Ehlers, right? So you have to be getting contributions from the third and fourth line because you can't necessarily depend on these players night in and night out to always be driving the bus.
Well, you look at the Jets' time on ice in Vancouver, and if you really, I mean, all due respect to the Vancouver Canucks, they're not an upper echelon NHL team. So if you can't get your third and fourth line guys consistently up to 10 minutes in that game, what game are you going to be able to do it to? You know, Marco Dano, 5:46. You know, Nick Patan, 6:50, and Andrew Kopp, just over 8 minutes. I mean, you need to get a consistent from your one of your bottom lines. You need to consistently get them up over 10 minutes. You look at the Canucks on the flip side. The only player that didn't reach double digits in minutes was Jake Virtanen. He had 7:06. Alex Edler only had 6:10, but he got injured in the course of the game.
Well, part of that also, Drew, is, you know, the Jets are hanging on to a lead, so you're going to rely more on the top three lines. And you saw Paul Maurice do that in the game against the Oilers, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not rare that, you know, the fourth line starts to get squeezed a little bit in the third period. But I actually think Andrew Kopp has been really good the mm-hmm. first four games of the year. For me, it's really you're just not getting a lot of production from Marco Dano, and he's an offensive player, right? So, I mean, whether you want to put Joel Armia into the lineup or I don't know what you want to do, but I think you have to get him going.
Well, it leaves the question because Matt Hendricks also did he not take the pregame skate in Vancouver as well? Or he practiced in Vancouver, so he's close to getting back into the lineup, and by all accounts, at least based on his preseason performance and what the team has said, as soon as he's healthy, there's a role for him in that bottom six as well.
And I'll say this about Vancouver. Vancouver might not be a playoff team this year, but they look a lot better than they did last year. I'll say that. It's only been three games, but that's a team that was playing hard.
Yeah, they have a structure. They lack in talent. You know, they lack in talent, but at least they have an identity and they have a structure. And Travis Green, you know, at least four games into his career, looks like he's going to be a solid NHL head coach who comes in with a strategy and has, you know, the players know what is expected of them on a night-in, night-out basis. Let's be honest. The Jets were not heads and shoulders better than the Vancouver Canucks on Thursday night by any stretch of the imagination. They have more talent, and the fact that they have more talent allowed them to get that, you know, a victory. I mean, when the Jets only put up, how many shots did they have in total on Thursday night? 20? When they only have 20 shots, you know, you're sort of fortunate to get three goals on 20 shots.
Was it only 20? I thought it was higher than that.
20 shots.
Really?
That's it. They were outshot. I mean, they only had five shots in the third period. You know, Patrick Laine gets the goal, you know, in the second period.
That was a beauty.
The shot by Laine.
And also, really, you know, Kulikov made a great play at the blue line.
Yeah.
Brian Little made a great play to stop. I think he was on Dorsett, and Dorsett peeled away, and then Little stopped, curled, and then saw Laine hit him perfectly. So.
Yeah. You know, and you know the Morrissey goal, which looked like it was deflected in off of the Canucks defenseman. That was off of the Canucks player broke his stick on that incident. The Jets were able to keep control for a large percentage of that play as a result. I mean, the Jets, look, they're 2-2, and they're feeling a lot better about themselves, but the performance on Thursday night, the victory, covered up a lot of the warts that that performance actually displayed.
Yeah, and Jacob Markstrom has been excellent so far this year. I think his save percentage is around 930. He's been really good with a 1-1-1 record. And, you know, when you consider that a guy like Brock Besser picked up his first NHL point, and then you've got guys like Elias Pettersson, who they drafted fifth overall last year. I mean, they've got a good stable of prospects. Throw in Jake Virtanen, he's still young. Yeah, so this team is going to be good 2 or 3 years from now.
The Canucks are in the midst of a rebuild, and the Jets, you know, to their credit, they got the win. That's all that matters, but they'll have to be better, you know, certainly this week, starting tonight against the Carolina Hurricanes team that a lot of people have pegged for a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Jets and the Hurricanes, preview tonight's contest at Bell MTS Place. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment,
chicks for free.
This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make your teeth ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. The last time the Jets and the Hurricanes met in Winnipeg, it was the home opener last season. This is what happened.
There's a chance, shorthanded, Wheeler scores! A shorthanded goal by the captain pulls the Jets back to within two. Down for Kyle Connor. Back for Enstrom for Line A. Line A, the wrist shot, scores! The shot blocked. Line A has it again. Cross ice, Wheeler. It score! Matthew Perreault! And the Jets, with three unanswered, have tied this thing up at four. Skinner poke checked at the line, and Scheifele couldn't break free. Here comes Wheeler in overtime for Scheifele. Scores! Mark Scheifele from the captain, Blake Wheeler.
The Jets defeating the Hurricanes 5-4 last October in the Jets' home opener. I love excited Dennis Bayak, and that certainly was an exciting night at the Old Barn last October. The Jets and the Canes, 6 p.m. tonight. The Jets playing their fifth game of the season, only the third game for the Carolina Hurricanes. They're 1-0-1 so far this season, so not a lot you can really take from the Carolina Hurricanes' performance thus far this year. But you certainly know what they are at this point in time. They're a team that's very deep on the back end, sort of a very young and talented defense, and they've got some, you know, forwards that can certainly put the puck in the net. They bring in Justin Williams, the veteran winger, comes back for a second stint in Carolina after spending the last few years in Washington. So this Carolina Hurricanes team is certainly a quality NHL team, a team that a lot of people have pegged to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference this season.
Yeah, Drew, as you mentioned, the Hurricanes have only played two games. Kind of a weird schedule. The Hurricanes actually didn't start the season until the Saturday because the season started on Wednesday, so they didn't play for the first three nights of the NHL regular season, had 2 days off, and then they had another 3 days off between their last game, which was against Columbus. They lost 2-1, and then obviously tonight's game against the Jets. So kind of weird that they've only played two games, so they're off to a 1-1 start, so you can't read too much into that, right? A
lot of practice time.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, you know, good for the special teams, right? But, you know, you mentioned, you know, that decor and The big change was in goal. And, you know, you acquire Justin Williams, and he obviously won the Cup in 2006. So you acquired Williams, but really the big change was acquiring Scott Darling. And Scott Darling you know, gets his opportunity to finally be a number one goaltender. We knew that that was not going to happen in Chicago with Corey Crawford there, but, right. you know, that defense to me is what really sticks out. It's a hard team to play against, but it's a team that moves the puck really well out of their own zone. The only real change there is that Hayden Fleury looks like he's going to get an opportunity to play full-time in the NHL. Spent the majority of last season, as Dave knows, with the Charlotte Checkers. Had a really good year. He's a former top 10 pick of the Hurricanes, so he's a guy that's been on the third pair for them, but for me, Jacob Slavin and Brett Pesce, they've been an excellent second pair. Noah Hanifin and Justin Falk, that's your top pair. Mm-hmm. So as far as, you know, defenses go,
I just mentioned Trevor Van Riemsdyk, who, yeah. of course, the Hurricanes acquired from the Vegas Golden Knights via the Chicago Blackhawks. He's out of the lineup with a concussion.
Right, yeah, that's a good point. They did acquire him, but as you mentioned, he hasn't played. And then when you talk about that forward group, I mean, last year was a breakout year. The Hurricanes didn't make the playoffs, but they came close. So you had players like Sebastian Aho, Victor Rask, Elias Lindholm. They really took that next step in their development. And there's no reason we should throw in Teuvo Teravainen, who came over from the Chicago Blackhawks as well. But when you throw in guys like Jeff Skinner, and then we mentioned Justin Williams, I mean, they've kind of got that good mix of rookies and I shouldn't say rookies. I should say young players, yeah. and veterans. Jordan Staal, it's hard to believe that he's a veteran player now, but he's been in the league for 10 years now. So, you know, it's going to be tough for them because they're in the tough Metropolitan Division. But this is a very quick team, and they haven't scored a lot of goals so far. I think they've only scored 6 goals so far.
That's correct. One of them in a shootout, of course. So really
right.
5 goals in actual
right.
action.
And it's only been 2 games. But, I mean, this team is going to be better offensively, especially when you consider, I mean, you expect Noah Hanifin to take a next step. You expect Jacob Slavin and Brett Pesce. They're both young defensemen. You expect them to add some offense from the back end, right? So it's going to be a big test for the Jets. They were a good team last year, but the team they're going to face tonight is a better team.
You know, and what I like about the Hurricanes is they really do run 4 lines deep. I mean, they have yep. scoring on all 4 lines. I mean, when you have a guy
like... Well, Marcus
like,
Kruger's another guy they added.
Right, Marcus Kruger also coming over from the Blackhawks or via the Blackhawks. And, you know, when Marcus Kruger is really your fourth line center, you're doing...
That's what he was for Chicago.
I know, and that's yep. a good role for him. I'm yep. saying, you know, you are deep. You know, you go up the middle with Staal and Rask, and, you know, Derek Ryan is in your third line, but he's playing with Jeff Skinner. So you have talent on all 4 lines for the Carolina Hurricanes. So this is a team that is pretty deep up front.
Yep.
Nobody that I would call a superstar in terms of a forward, but you know, you can run 4 lines, and their defense is very solid. And Scott Darling, well, I mean, he's getting his first opportunity to be a number one goalie in the NHL, but you know, I think most people expect Scott Darling to succeed in that role, and Cam Ward, of course, the veteran backup there in Carolina. Dave, you mentioned, and I want to circle back to this, we talked about in the first segment, the concept or the idea of maybe going with Mason over Hellebuck. Do you think that's a possibility tonight? I think most Jets fans would be surprised if it was anybody other than Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a question of, do you ride the hot hand? And Connor Hellebuck's play has dictated that he probably deserves to start tonight's game because he's played extremely well in the last 2 games for the Jets, and he's given them the opportunity to win the games. And that's really what what matters. That knuckle puck that, as he talked about in the previous segment, that Tanev scored against him. I mean, that was just an unusual goal. But, I mean, other than that, I thought he was very good the entire game. He's been very good both games. I mean, he was good in the preseason. And the truth is, and you can't blame it all on Steve Mason, because let's be realistic, the Jets' defense as a team collectively in the first 2 games was not good. Some of those goals against him were just like terrible team as a collective group. You can't mm-hmm. you don't put it on one player. So the only reason why you perhaps give him the opportunity is because in your mind maybe this is, again, I'm not saying it's going to be an easy game by any stretch of the imagination, but perhaps a little bit easier than a heavy team like Columbus. So you want to give Mason that confidence, but you really can't afford to have your group kind of like lose that mojo that they've built over the last 2. So, I mean, it's a tough call. I mean, we'll see, like you said, Drew, we'll see soon enough, but I would probably go with Hellebuck simply because you don't really worry about individual feelings at this point. You just want to get the points.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, what message are you sending to Connor Hellebuck or to your entire team if he's played well for 2 straight games and all of a sudden he loses the... It's not like you're in a back-to-back situation. It's not like you're playing a lot of games in a short window of time. The schedule right now is very relaxed, and I get the idea and I understand the need to get Mason back in the net after, you know, he's got those 2 bad games under his belt. So I get that impression, but push comes to shove, your job is to win games, not be especially concerned with Steve Mason's feelings.
Yeah, Drew, you just mentioned it. I think it's less so to do about the message you're sending to your goalies and the team, and more about that you want to get the win, and Paul Maurice should put that goalie out there that he thinks will get them the win. Plain and simple, right?
Mm-hmm.
And right now, Connor Hellebuck is playing better than Steve Mason. That doesn't mean that Connor Hellebuck's going to play more games than Steve Mason this year. It just means that Hellebuck's been better than Mason the first couple of games that he's played as compared to Mason's first couple of games, right? So if I was the coach, obviously I'm not and never will be.
Uh-huh.
But Connor Hellebuck, I think, absolutely deserves to be in the net tonight versus Carolina. But you could say Steve Mason does as well. He was given a two-year contract. He was brought in to play more than Connor Hellebuck, I believe. So we'll wait and see. But if I was a betting man, I'd say Hellebuck starts tonight.
I would agree with you. And I mean, you know, the idea of that Mason was brought in as a number one goaltender, yeah, that's probably the case. But from the Jets' perspective, if Connor Hellebuck steals the job, and it's too soon to say that because he's only played two games, but if all of a sudden Connor Hellebuck is your better of two options in net, you know, so be it. The contract signing isn't great, but that shouldn't be of a concern. That's a concern of Mark Chipman and the dollars he spends. That's not a concern of anyone else. It's play the guy who's going to give you the best chance to win night in and night out, because that's what this team needs more than anything is wins.
And Dave, Steve Mason might play tonight. He might not. But even if he doesn't play tonight, I mean, this is a guy who's been in the NHL for a long time now, 10 plus years, right?
Yeah.
So if he doesn't play tonight, it's not like he's going to have a bruised ego and he's going to be all depressed and sulking on the bench. He'll probably be happy that Helly's going back into the lineup.
Well, you know, it sounds like Steve Mason, from what you've heard from him during training camp and everything else, is that he's a guy who needs to play in his own perspective. He plays better when he plays lots of games in a row. And that was part of the problem he had at the end in Philadelphia.
Yeah, but you know what? Hold on a second, Drew, to cut you off. I think every goaltender wants to be in the net as much as they can, right? Yep. I don't think any goaltender is going to say, okay, this year I want to play 10 games.
No. Nope.
Right?
Definitely.
So I know what you're saying, though. I mean, Steve Mason, I think, ideally wants to play 55 to 60 games this year. But to your point earlier, and I was agreeing with you, if Hellebuck's playing better, I think you got to stick with him.
I agree. I don't have an argument there whatsoever.
No, I was going to say, like, I think I was, my point would have been the exact one that Ezzy just made. I think both goalies want to be the number one guy. Both goalies, like, it's not like Connor Hellebuck's like, okay, cool, I'm going to slip back into a backup role and I'm just going to learn, and that's, I'm going to be content doing that for the next 2 years. I mean, you saw that he was determined. He went this summer out west to kind of hone his game and learn, develop some new tools. Clearly did that, came, brought them into the season, and he's playing very well. So the reality is the Jets don't have a 10-year contract with Steve Mason. The truth is, if they want to give Connor Hellebuck, because he deserves to be the starter, the role, they're going to give him the starter. They don't really care. You have to understand, this is a results-based business. At the end of the day, you know, it's a 2-year deal for Mason. If he can be the, if he is functioning in whatever role he's functioning in and the team's winning, that's all that matters.
When we come back, John Forslund, Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play broadcaster, is going to join us to talk about the Jets' opponent tonight. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. A quick update from Winnipeg Jets morning skate. Adam Lowry not taking part in the morning skate. No idea as of yet if it's a maintenance issue or if it's an injury issue. We'll give you an update as quickly as we have it. Dustin Byfuglien is on the ice, paired with Toby Enstrom. Much more on the Jets morning skate as we go on this Saturday morning.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, John Forslund. John is the Carolina Hurricanes broadcaster for Fox Sports Carolinas. John, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing very well, John. How about yourself?
Doing great. It's good to see this team play. They've only had two games, and we're going to petition the league to see if we still qualify for league status. We're getting worried.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting schedule to start the season for the Hurricanes, only playing two games within the first, you know, 10 or 11 days of the league schedule or the league season. How has Bill Peters handled that sort of interesting schedule? It's almost like you get an extra week to 10 days of training camp out of it.
Yeah, you know what? Their last exhibition game was on September 29th, so he had an 8-day break there before the opener on October 7th. Mixed in a few days of rest with some hard practices and, you know, try to do the best you can to replicate the game speed, which, as you guys know, is next to impossible. Then they started the season with a shootout win last Saturday night at home and followed it up with an overtime loss against Columbus on Tuesday night and then another break. But it now will get into more of a rhythm for the Hurricanes, and they start a four-game road trip here tonight, and they're looking forward to getting back into a practice play type rhythm that just about everybody else has been in.
John, how has Scott Darling looked in his first two games, and do you expect Scott Darling to get the start tonight against the Jets?
Yeah, I expect him to play tonight. His first game, I thought, and by his own admission, he said he was nervous and a little bit jittery. He got through it, battled. I think that first game against Minnesota, he won it 5-4 in the shootout. It was kind of a microcosm of the guy's career. You know, lots of pitfalls early and then building himself back up again. He's an incredible story to put himself on the map as he did, you know, with the Blackhawks to earn an opportunity to become a number one goaltender. Pretty solid against Columbus Tuesday night, although the wraparound goal that beat him was a Sonny Milano below the goal line, which you never want to get scored on as a goalie. And, you know, he too admitted that it was a soft goal. So, you know, I think he's looking forward to, again, getting in more of a rhythm like the team. I expect him to play here tonight in the way the schedule is. Unless he falters and scuffles around a little bit, I would expect that he would play tonight. They go to Edmonton Tuesday. They have another off day. They play in Calgary Thursday and finish it up a week from tonight in Dallas. So there really isn't that situation where, you know, you might go to the number two, although Cam Ward is standing by and he's anxious to get in, I'm sure.
John, the Hurricanes didn't have a captain last season, and now they have two in Jordan Staal and defenseman Justin Falk. Are you surprised that they went with the split captaincy, and what do each of those players bring to the role of captain?
Yeah, I really am, because I don't know what the difference is by having two captains or having zero captains, which they had last year. So they had a leadership core. It's a young team. It's the second youngest team in the league right now. And I kind of figured, okay, if they got through that, and then they said during the offseason they would address it and name a captain, but no one saw the co-captaincy coming. So obviously they couldn't get to a guy or, you know, all agree on one specific guy to lead this team. My independent opinion on the whole thing was that I thought Justin Williams would be an outstanding captain. Not just a guy that's come in from the outside. This is a guy that has a link to the best days the Hurricanes have ever had. So you bring him back, and I thought that at his age with a two-year deal, significant money given to him, it gives him an opportunity to kind of bridge to the next generation, the next level of captaincy, whether it's Jacob Slavin or Sebastian Aho or Jeff Skinner with a new contract in a couple of seasons. You know, I figured that's the way it was going to go. But they opted to go this way, and it's a committee. And Jordan Staal and Justin Falk have earned the opportunity to lead this team and share those duties, I guess.
John Forslund is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. John is the play-by-play broadcaster for the Carolina Hurricanes. John, you know, coming into the season, the Hurricanes were sort of the popular pick from a lot of prognosticators to come from being a non-playoff team to being a playoff team in the Eastern Conference. No doubt that you know, that those predictions were also heard in the Hurricanes dressing room. How has the team sort of embraced the extra layer of pressure that comes with expectations for the first time in a long time?
Well, that's a good question. And that, for me, is the one thing that we're going to have to see play out here. They've never been in this role or this position before where there are some expectations placed on them. It's a season where they have to. And there's a variety of different reasons. Obviously, they've worked hard under Bill Peters the last 3 years to kind of build a foundation. But, you know, in Raleigh, in that market, it needs a revival. The fan base has to get excited again, and they're slow to the trigger so far. So I think it's very important that the Hurricanes get relevant in the East, make the playoffs, and make an impression. But with that, as you say, comes a level of expectation. So they played their best hockey under situations which require no pressure. So we've seen great second halves over the last couple of years. We've seen tremendous surges after the trading deadline. That's not really what it's all about. When everybody's on level ground, and certainly when people on the outside are picking you to make the playoffs and you have a young team, it's a little bit different. So I'm interested to watch and see how they handle it. see how they handle this four-game road trip. And, you know, they're going to have to get off to a decent start in the season's first month because there's already, based on the scheduling, but, you know, Washington's 3-1-1. Columbus is off to a very good start. Pittsburgh is Pittsburgh. So, you know, it's a tremendously competitive division, and they're going to need a solid first month. There's no doubt about that.
John, how has the pride of Carlisle, Saskatchewan, Hayden Fleury looked in the first two games for the Hurricanes? And when Trevor Van Riemsdyk comes back into the lineup, do you expect Fleury to stick up with the Hurricanes?
Yeah, I do. And I think he played really well in his first two games, especially the second game when, you know, with Van Riemsdyk, they had been together the entire preseason. So they had a little chemistry. They had played off each other really well, so it looked like, okay, they figured out the 5-6, which was an issue for the Hurricanes last year. They got that right-handed shot that they needed. They auditioned three or four guys there last year, and nothing worked. So now you bring in Van Riemsdyk. Fleury's the one kid who spent the entire year in Charlotte last year in the American League, and they probably could have brought him up a couple of times, but they left him there on purpose, and he turned in an outstanding season. So everyone in the organization thought he was ready. Now you get to the point where he has to prove it, and he's proved it through the two games. In the second game, he had a play with Klaus Dalbec, who was playing his offside, and Dalbec struggled through that game, and Fleury was the guy that was a standout in that third pairing. So good for him. I think it's been, you know, it's always great when you see players get picked in the first round, but with that, these kids carry around a burden, especially if they don't hit the ground running. And for him, a seventh overall pick in 2014, people start to ask questions when you get to 2017 and you're not in the league yet. And that's not always easy. And he's a tremendous young man, and I really like how he's played in his first two games. So let's hope that continues for the Hurricanes.
John, even though it has only been two games, what have your impressions been of the Hurricanes special team so far?
I'm sorry? One more time?
What's your impression of the Hurricanes special team so far?
The power play has been static. Preseason, the power play was outstanding. They were falling, the entries were good, they were moving the puck well, they looked like they had confidence and they were scoring. It's dried up in the regular season, albeit two games, but they had a chance to win Tuesday's game in overtime in a 4-on-3, and it wasn't really anything Columbus did, it was more or less what the Canes did in terms of not playing with a lot of conviction, not generating much. So you worry about that a little bit. The penalty killing has been great for the last 3 years. It's been a top five. You know, I think they finished number six last year, but for most of the year, they were either one, two, or three. Exceptional on the road. Steve Smith, one of the assistant coaches, has done a very good job with it. I'm not too concerned about that. But it's the power play, because I still think a challenge that presents itself for the Hurricanes will be 5-on-5 scoring. And, you know, if that's not going to be strong, then obviously your power play's got to pick up the slack. So they're going to have to be better. They were a bottom feeder with their power play last year, not off to a very good start. I know that's going to be a point of concern when Bill Peters gets some practice time, you know, away from home this week.
John, you mentioned Jeff Skinner earlier, and, you know, we talked about it last segment. You know, a big acquisition for the Carolina Hurricanes was bringing back Justin Williams. Was part of the reason to bring back Justin Williams that you could give the Hurricanes another veteran that you could put on the second or third line in addition to Jeff Skinner?
Yeah, they're hoping, you know, that Williams will provide 20 goals. And, you know, you look at Skinner's season last year, 37 goals. He scored 17 of those in the last 21 games. He's just a guy that you're going to have to, based on their challenges to score, you're going to have to count on that number. Sebastian Aho in his rookie year scored 24 goals, so they're expecting, you know, it's a lot to ask of a second-year player, but they're expecting that even more. And then you're going to augment that with a guy like Williams, who I think is there to provide support scoring and some leadership, which gets us back to the top of the interview. I'm surprised he doesn't even have a letter, you know, with this team, but he's going to be a guy that's going to lead, and I know that he's going to have an effect on a lot of these younger players, just relieving some of that pressure from the expectation that we talked about. So, yeah, I think Williams was brought in for a variety of different reasons. He handpicked it. He wanted to come back to Raleigh. He played enough against the Canes over the last 2 years in the division to know that they're trending upward. Loves the area. And, you know, again, it's the 20th anniversary season in North Carolina, so it's kind of nice that they brought back a player like this who's had tremendous success as a Hurricane to kind of be part of the group.
John, we'll let you go on this last question. We know that the Hurricanes have sort of become the Chicago of the Southeast with so many ex-Blackhawks on the roster. How has that sort of Chicago contingent fit in into the dressing room with the sort of the existing Hurricanes players as they continually sort of touch, you know, help the Blackhawks out with their salary cap issues each and every offseason?
They're starting to outnumber the Hurricanes, aren't they? you look at it, It's really interesting, and I think you're right. I think Ron's had a direct line to Stan Bowman, a team that, you know, is always fighting the cap, and they're the Hurricanes with no cap issues welcoming these players. And Ron is very good friends with Joel Quenneville, so he's going to get a good read on a lot of these guys. But I think what they wanted to do is just bring in some players that have had success. And, you know, whether it be in subordinate roles like Marcus Kruger, Van Riemsdyk, Joakim Nordstrom, Abel Teravainen, Scott Darling, you go down the list here, they all had something to do with what they did. Sure, they weren't at the top of the lineup, but they learned about it, they went through it, and they understand from an organizational standpoint what the standards were in Chicago, and Bill Peters is trying to change culture in Carolina. And culture becomes just a word unless you actually bring in guys who have lived it and can do it. And I think that's what they're looking at with a lot of these players, and time will tell as they go through their 82-game journey this year if it really is meaningful. But I think that's the direction. I think it's to add players that are good, but I think it's also an opportunity to bring in guys who have won before. And in any dressing room, that's very important, as you know.
John Forslund is the Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play broadcaster on Fox Sports Carolinas. John, always appreciate your time. Have a good call tonight. Thanks for joining us.
Anytime, boys.
Take care, John. Thanks again. When we come back, we tell you what's happening at Winnipeg Jets game day skate. I suspect it's going to raise the eyebrows of some Jets fans. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
How you like me now, Drew?
Yes. Great props to producer Rory for putting together that clip of the Jets defense in action. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Did you see the pizza that Frank tweeted out last weekend?
I missed that one.
It looked so good that I almost wanted to like reach into my computer screen and try to eat it.
You know that doesn't work, right?
No, it doesn't.
Okay, just want to make sure that you understand that you can't actually do that. But I appreciate that. I'll have to look back and see the pizza that Frank tweeted. Jets game day skate, it's underway. Here's what you need to know. First of all, your top six, that hasn't changed among your forwards. Ehlers, Scheifele, and Wheeler. Perreault, Little, Laine. No questions there. Your third line as currently deployed, Sean Mathias, Andrew Kopp, and Brandon Tanev. And then your fourth line, Marco Dano, Nick Patan, and Joel Armia. the important takeaway from your forward group, no Adam Lowry on the ice for Winnipeg Jets game day skate. We don't yet know if that means he's out of the lineup tonight, if it's just a maintenance thing. We'll find out when Paul Maurice speaks to the media coming up here in a little bit. On the back end, Dustin Byfuglien among those skating for the Winnipeg Jets.
The Sturgeon Slayer.
The Sturgeon Slayer.
Well, he wasn't a slayer. He didn't kill
him. Yeah, that's right. They caught and released it. I'm glad they caught and released it because I don't like the idea of killing that prehistoric
thing. You're not allowed to, I'm pretty sure.
That's good. You shouldn't be allowed to. That thing looks like it's probably 14 million years old or something.
They actually called Drew the Salami Slayer.
Yeah. Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba, Toby Enstrom and Dustin Byfuglien, Dmitry Kulikov with Tyler Myers, and it looks like your extra pair of defensemen is Ben Sherratt and Tucker Poolman.
Yeah, and that's not a surprise. The big surprise is in goal.
In goal tonight, looks like Steve Mason is going to get the start in goal for the Winnipeg Jets tonight. He obviously had those two poor performances to start the year, last Wednesday against the Leafs and then last Saturday against the Flames. He was pulled in both of those games. Looks like Steve Mason, even though Connor Hellebuck with the back-to-back victories where he played well, Steve Mason in goal for the Winnipeg Jets tonight, which to me, given that your only priority is wins, to me that's a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, and I guess we shouldn't be that surprised considering, you know, that Steve Mason was brought in here to be the number one goalie, but it's more so surprising, as you mentioned, Drew, because Connor Hellebuck played so well the last couple of games. But, you know, I expect Steve Mason to be much better than he was against Toronto and against Calgary. So I can see why Paul Maurice made the decision to start Steve Mason. I don't think you want Mason, and I'm sure Paul Maurice will say this pregame, I'm sure he didn't want Steve Mason to stay on the bench for too long, right?
Sure.
But when you're talking about Connor Hellebuck, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Connor Hellebuck was the first star of both of those games against Edmonton and Vancouver. To me, he was the best player on the ice.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So what message are you sending to Connor Hellebuck? Or, you know, even maybe message is too strong of a word, but, you know, he's the best player for two straight games. He gets two straight victories for the Jets. And off of a relaxed schedule, you decide to go back to Steve Mason. And I get the need to get Steve Mason some confidence and get him feeling good about himself. But, I mean, it's a sort of a dangerous roll of the dice, I would suggest, for Paul Maurice. If things go poorly tonight, if the Jets come home, play their second game on home ice, and Steve Mason struggles again, and maybe you have to pull him again, what then for the Winnipeg Jets goaltender
situation? I wouldn't be too concerned about that, Drew. The reality is, goalies are not guaranteed starts, right? Like, unless you're Cam Talbot, Dave, or unless you're Braden Holtby or Carey Price, you're not guaranteed to really start every night, right? You're talking about goalies that start 60, 65, 70 games, right? When you're talking about Talbot and Holtby, mm-hmm. and Price, you know, you expect him to be around 60, 65 if he's healthy. But, I mean, you have a situation where really you have 1A and 1B as far as I'm concerned. In the offseason, I mean, it looked like Steve Mason was really going to get the majority of the starts, guys, but maybe that's not going to happen. I mean, maybe these two goalies split the starts this year.
Well, I think you play whoever's playing better, who gives you the best chance to win night in, night out, and that's why I'm a little surprised that you go with Mason tonight, because right now I would suggest that Hellebuck is the goalie that gives you the best chance to win, given how he played on the road trip.
But and also in the preseason. Hellebuck was excellent during the preseason, I thought.
Yeah, I think the truth is that maybe you're resting Hellebuck. Maybe you want Hellebuck to face Columbus. Maybe you're more concerned about Columbus than you are about Carolina, and you think to yourself, this is an opportunity to get Mason feeling good, and then you want Hellebuck to go in on the next game, which may be a little bit of a tougher game, a heavier game, like we talked about earlier. And
if Mason plays well tonight,
yeah, you know, I mean,
there's no way you go back to Hellebuck on Tuesday night, I don't think.
Look, like I said, the other big factor we haven't discussed yet is the fact that Dustin Byfuglien looks like he might be back in the lineup, which means Tucker Poolman is out. Jets are 2-0 with Tucker Poolman in the lineup, so that's a big one. You know, Tucker Poolman's looked very good. I mean, obviously, when you call it, he's not exactly a young rookie at 24 years of age, but he has looked very good, very solid for the Jets so far. So
maybe you put Tucker Poolman on the fourth line, right wing.
Well, I mean, I don't think you make him into a forward. But
no, kidding, Drew.
I know you are, but I was going to suggest to you guys, you know, in the course of this segment, why, given what you've seen from the Jets' bottom six so far, why don't you maybe think outside the box and go with 7 defensemen and 11 forwards?
It's not a crazy idea.
Tucker Poolman deserves to be in the lineup given how he's played.
Yep.
And so you go with, I don't know why you don't go with 11 forward. I mean, you're not even
playing. You kind of have Pullman play that kind of rover role.
Or Bufflin playing that rover role, whatever it might be. Your bottom six.
Well, Buff's going to play more
of course, but
when
I
he's
mean,
in the lineup.
But your bottom six right now is not even giving you, it's giving you very little 5-on-5. It can barely crack 10 minutes in terms of time on ice. So why don't you go with 7 defensemen and 11 forwards? I don't think it's an outrageous suggestion, especially given you have 7 appear to be seven NHL caliber defensemen right now.
Right, and you only do that, Drew, if you're really not going to play your fourth line that much, right? And you see that quite often in the NHL when there are injuries and you have maybe cap problems, you're on the road. You know, you don't see teams employ 7 defensemen a lot. Some teams do it more often than others. The Jets certainly haven't done it much in their 6 years in the NHL.
How many minutes do you think, given what you've seen from Marco Dano, Nick Patan, and Joel Armia, and given the way Paul Maurice has deployed his forwards this year, how many minutes in a best case scenario are those guys going to be out on the ice for?
Probably around 10 to 12 minutes, but you don't want them playing 4 to 5 minutes.
Well, that's the problem is they have been playing some. There have been games where they're playing 4 to 5 minutes,
and
or
I think
five
that's
to
a problem.
6 minutes. I agree. So why don't you go with the 7 defensemen, 11 forwards idea if you have no confidence in your bottom six? Or if you can't put you don't feel that you can put your bottom six out on the ice for the 10 to 12 minutes per game, which isn't a big ask, I don't think. Why not sort of think outside the box and go with 11 and 7?
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, it's something to consider. I don't think they're going to do it, but it's definitely an idea, and it's a good idea.
I'm glad you agree. Dave, what do you think about that idea? It's certainly not something that, I mean,
and by the way, Drew, I hate disagreeing with you, by the way.
I know you do.
So I hate it when you have a good idea.
I know. I feel
it,
your pain, to be
me.
Perfectly honest. I mean, Paul Maurice is he once deployed Adam Partey, more than once. He deployed Adam Partey on the wing for a couple games a few years back.
That's just because he likes to party.
Well, but I mean, if you're going to put Adam Partey up as a forward on the wing, why not go with 7 defensemen at some point?
Well, and I believe the Jets had injuries at that point, why he was playing forward.
Look, the fact is, you have both Tucker Pullman and Dustin Bufflin who can occasionally rove up to forward, and both have been using that role. So, I mean, it wouldn't be shocking, but, I don't think you need to reinvent the wheel yet. I think you just stick with what you've got, and then and you see if you need to start making adjustments. I would suspect you'd be more inclined, like Ezzy was talking about, if you do that with an injury situation as opposed to when you've got all the troops are healthy.
And it's a good point, Dave. And the thing you run into oftentimes when you have an extra defenseman out there is he doesn't play much, right?
Exactly.
So he only plays 5 or 6 minutes. Sure. So, but it's something to consider. We might see the Jets do that this year, especially, Drew, with how well Tucker Pullman's played. I think there's a strong argument that he should stay with the Jets and not be sent down.
I agree, and not be in the press box. I think he's proven that he's at least through those two games, and things can change.
Maybe he can play goal.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're scheduled to be joined by Brendan Lemieux of the Manitoba Moose. That should be coming up next to start hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
And fakes a shot. Left for DeLeo, right circle, Lemieux shoots and scores! Brendan Lemieux, 4-3 on the power play.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website that's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program Manitoba Moose forward Brendan Lemieux. Brendan, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Morning, how are you?
Doing very well, Brendan. How about yourself?
Doing well.
That's good. Brendan, obviously brought you on. Talk about yourself. Talk about the Moose start to the season. Hard-fought defeat last night at home to the Monsters. So far this year, though, you went in and got a victory, a solid victory early on in the year. How would you assess the season so far through the first three games?
Well, I think it's been all right. Obviously the split against the defending champs in Grand Rapids was okay. And we were pretty pleased with our effort in the second game over there. And then, last night we let one slip away from us. We had a good first period, and we couldn't follow it up with two better periods. And so we're looking to bounce back and have a better effort tomorrow.
Brendan, this is your second full year in the American Hockey League. You played a little bit for the Moose after your Ontario Hockey League season ended. For you personally, what areas of your game are you trying to grow the most?
Well, I think it's, you know, just a matter of putting together a consistent season. I think last year I had a lot of injuries and struggled to put together a full, well-rounded year. But there's a lot of growth that needed to happen, you know, being my first year pro. And now this year it's just about, you know, proving, obviously playing a little bit more and proving that I, you know, deserve to be on the ice a little bit more, proving that I can score the way I did in junior and pro. And then, you know, obviously touching up some stuff, some different areas of my game, but implementing the new, you know, more pace to my game that I feel like I've brought over the summer. And then, obviously being good on the penalty kill along with the power play. So,
Brendan, that was probably the most dominant first period I've seen the Moose play, perhaps, you know, since they've come back to Winnipeg. What did you see from the team in the first 20 minutes of that game last night?
Well, I think it was pretty close to the way we played in Grand Rapids. That's just our team this year. We got a good team, not the same group of guys as we had last year. So it's we're a lot stronger, and especially, you know, Casey and Rosie, they're stepping into being second year guys, and their confidence is a lot, you know, better, stronger, and they're, you know, going to be hard to play against. They're going to be a dominant force in this league this year, I think.
Brendan Lemieux, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about himself and, of course, his Manitoba Moose teammates. And, Brendan, you mentioned that you expect Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic to be sort of dominant players in the AHL this year. And after a couple of down seasons for the Moose, you know, the trajectory is definitely pointed upwards. In the dressing room, are you feeling those sort of added expectations from the team, you know, that we expect, you know, you see the talent on the ice and you expect that to translate into victories in the win column?
Well, yeah, I think, obviously, we expect to do better than we did last year, but we still understand that we're a younger group. But, I mean, I think all being younger players, but being guys that feel like they're good players and that want to be NHL players, and we have certain expectations that, you know, definitely are higher than any added pressure that could be added by anyone outside of the group. So, no, I don't think we feel any extra pressure, but I definitely do think there are a lot of expectations within the dressing room that guys, you know, want to do well, and definitely disappointed to drop that one at home last night.
Brendan, you obviously have a pretty famous dad. Claude Lemieux was a Conn Smythe Trophy winner, a multiple-time Stanley Cup champion. How often does your dad get to watch you play, and how's he doing these days?
He's doing well. He's an agent and runs an agency, and he gets to watch me a fair bit. Most nights he'll watch either online or, you know, he probably makes it out to Winnipeg 4 or 5 times a year. So,
Brendan,
he gets to watch a fair bit.
You've played with Michael Skarbosa and Michael Spacek now for all 3 games on your line. What have you guys started to form a little bit of a chemistry, and what have you seen from the other 2 players?
Well, I think Scarbs and Spacek are 2 obviously high-end skilled guys, and so they're good players for me to play with and can move the puck well and can make good plays, and both power play type guys. So those are the kind of players I like playing with, being a more hard-nosed type power forward. And yeah, I think they both complement my game pretty well. I like it a lot.
Brendan Lemieux, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Brendan, you know, of course, last year was your first full season as a professional. This year, you know, how did your training regimen maybe change after a year of professional hockey versus a year of junior hockey?
Well, I don't think that had too much to do with the change. I think that every year you make changes based on how your season went in the off season, and I just made a change of trainer and you know, kind of went a different direction with my body and went a little bit lighter, a little bit leaner. And I've felt good so far, and I felt like I had a pretty good camp. And coming into the first few games of the year, it's been coming along okay, and I'm happy with the way I'm moving. And now it's just a matter of, you know, executing.
Did you focus on any areas in particular with your off-season training this past off-season?
Well, yeah, just being quicker, you know. I've always been able to. I'm a big, more powerful skater than most guys, but not maybe not the quickest. So I focused on getting quicker, being able to get to that top end speed a little bit faster, and then you know, and then all around stuff. But that was mainly the main focus, just with all these young guys coming into the league and playing at. You know, 180 pounds, there's a lot of quickness to the game nowadays that there wasn't in the last few years. So being a bigger guy, you want to make sure that you are able to get to that puck first sometimes. And so I felt like that was the most important part of my game I needed to improve.
Brendan, I wasn't at the rink last night, but Dave told me that you got into a fight last night with Justin Scott. Is that still a job that you like to have on the team, dropping the gloves every once in a while?
Yeah. Yeah, I think whenever I need to, I will.
Brendan Lemieux, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Brendan, you know, you had a good training camp and you had a good exhibition season with the Winnipeg Jets. When the decision was made, when they chose to send you back to the Moose, did the team tell you anything in particular, any areas they wanted you to work on, or is it just a sort of a function of keep doing what you're doing and hopefully your time will come, be it this year or next?
Well, I think that there were, you know, maybe a few reasons or a few things that they told me they wanted me to work on, but you know, sometimes you just got to be smart enough to know that sometimes it has a lot to do with you, and sometimes it has a lot to do with them when they're ready and when they've got holes and when they've got injuries, and so this year I thought. You know, I had a solid camp. I didn't have a great camp, but, you know, there's definitely some room to improve. But, with that same, you know, thought process, there's definitely some, I think I can help their team and just like I helped this team. And, so, you know, it's just about waiting for an opportunity to do that.
Brendan, you spent the majority of your junior career with the Barrie Colts, but you played a little bit with the Windsor Spitfires. Did you watch a lot of that Memorial Cup run last year and maybe talk to Logan Stanley and follow that a little bit last year while they were winning their Mem Cup championship?
Yeah, I watched almost all of it. Really excited for that group. Got a lot of good close friends on Windsor.
Brendan, do you come into the season, do you set goals for yourself in terms of hard numbers, or you say, okay, these are the things I want to do, and I just want to improve on those things, and I don't try and give myself a number, like X number of goals, X number of assists, that sort of idea?
Well, I think that a lot of that's out of your control. You never know who you're going to be playing with, how much you're going to be playing, and a lot of that is number related. So I never have really came into a year setting expectations. Since probably when I was in junior, when I knew I was going to be playing as much as I could handle every night, but no, I don't set really hard numbers.
Brendan, we'll let you go on this last question. Pascal Vincent, of course, the coach of the Manitoba Moose, his second season behind the bench as the head coach of the Moose. How have you seen him change, maybe from last year to this year, as he gets more comfortable in the role and you know, finds his voice a little bit more as the head coach of the Moose?
Well, I think coaches, I don't know if I would say that he's changed. I'd say that, you know, it's an older group. I think he knows what he can expect out of us. And, I think that, he understands, you know, the different ways that he needs to do things to get different things out of different players. And, I think that that's the way the season started. And he's, you know, just like us, he's working to help our team win and to be able to get wins. So it's hard for a player to judge a coach, really. I don't spend too much time doing that.
Brendan Lemieux is a forward with the Manitoba Moose. Brendan, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us. Best of luck tomorrow afternoon as you look to defeat the Monsters at home tomorrow afternoon.
Awesome. All right, thank you. Have a great day.
You too, Brendan. Thanks very much.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, Brendan.
When we come back, another change from Winnipeg Jets game day skate.
Is there a different goalie in net tonight, Drew?
Why don't you wait and find out after these commercial messages?
I want to know now.
You'll wait. You'll wait. And you'll wait and like it. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Yeah, and I think Barry Trotz has really made a project of Alex Ovechkin. Needs more of him in the postseason. So persuaded him, drop a few pounds, maybe you're a little quicker. Hey, we're all accustomed to seeing Ovi in this spot right here. That's where he scores two-thirds of his goals, all loaded up on the off-wing side. But here he is out of the gate this year, and we're seeing a couple of things. He seems more determined to shoot. 18 shots over his first three games for a league leader in that category. But notice, too, we're seeing him take shots in other areas and execute from other areas. Go into the paint, go into the hard areas, driving through and battling in and around the net front, able to get a stick on stuff, create confusion, in addition to being able to execute, being able to convert for the Washington Capitals.
Alex Ovechkin off to a torrid start for the Washington Capitals. Another goal last night against Ezzy's Devils. That makes it 9 goals in 5 games.
He had 2 points last night.
Yes, a goal and an assist. His first assist on the year. He's got 9 goals. He's got a great Cy Young record going. He's got 9 goals and 1 assist through the first 5 games for the Washington Capitals.
Clayton Kershaw.
There you go. We'll talk about Alex Ovechkin this segment. It is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys, known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team, or perhaps you have an Alex Ovechkin jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com. Check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue, the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Did, of course, want to mention that there's been a change to what we expected from the Winnipeg Jets after their game day skate.
Go on.
Steve Mason spent the game day skate in the traditional home goal. But as the skate ended, he stayed on the ice and did extra work with the scratches, those guys who are going to be the scratches in tonight's lineup. So it does sound like Connor Hellebuck, after a little subterfuge from the Winnipeg Jets, it looks like Connor Hellebuck is actually going to get his third consecutive start in goal for the team tonight. Jets playing a little bit of mind games maybe with the media, or I don't even know what they're doing, but after Mason looked like he was going to be the starter, now looks like Connor Hellebuck is going to be the starter in net for the Winnipeg Jets. We haven't yet officially heard from Paul Maurice. That's coming up, I believe, very shortly. Should be any minute now. But I expectation is that Maurice will confirm that Connor Hellebuck is going to get the start and goal for the Jets tonight.
Yeah, so you flipped the script there, Drew, a little bit, or the Jets flipped the script.
The old switcheroo.
Exactly, the old switcheroo, and you know that goes back to
what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Dave, it goes back to, what is a gander, by the way? Going back to the early...
No, it's from Seinfeld, Dave.
Thank you, Drew.
Going back to the early part of the show, that's what we thought was going to happen. We thought Hellebuck was going to start tonight, but you got to think, you know, there's 2 more home games here against Columbus and Minnesota. You wonder if maybe, depending on what happens here tonight, Steve Mason starts against his old team.
Well, that could be on Tuesday night against the Blue Jackets. Yep. You know, I guess a revenge factor or something like that. Is it still a revenge factor?
Yeah, if it's a previous team, I don't know if it still qualifies as revenge. But the other thing of note is that Tucker Pullman and Ben Sherrod are the healthy scratch.
Well, you know what they say, a revenge is a dish best served cold.
You'd still eat it.
Yeah, I'd eat anything.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So again, Pullman and Sherrod back to the press box, and we don't yet know the status of Adam Lowry, who missed the game day skate. We'll get that update to you just as soon as it happens. Anyways, Alex Ovechkin, you know, the popular preseason talk was that the Capitals window maybe is closed after the 2 straight President's Cup trophy winning campaigns and then the 2 straight disappointing playoff performances. Alex Ovechkin come out like a house on fire with 9 goals through his first 5 games. You know, did we write off Alex Ovechkin maybe a little too soon? He was coming off of a down year, only, I believe, 33 goals last season for the Washington Capitals after years of 51, 53, and 50. 9 through his first 5 games so far. Did we maybe sell Alex Ovechkin a little short to start the season, Ezzy?
Well, I certainly didn't, and I don't know why you would, Drew. He's only 32 years old, and I realized that last year, you know, he only had 33 goals. You expect Alex Ovechkin, you almost just expect 50 goals every single year, because he's done that how many times, right? But, I mean, you talk about his 9 goals in 5 games. He had 7 goals in 2 games.
Yeah.
So he's on pace. Slow down. He's on pace for, you know, quite a few goals this year, and 160 or whatever it is. Obviously, he's going to cool off a little bit. But the point is, writing off this Washington Capitals team, Dave, I think is a huge mistake. And I realize they've lost a lot of players. You know, we talked about Justin Williams more so on the back end when you talk about Kevin Shattenkirk, even though he was a rental player. But you're talking about Carl Alsner. You're talking about Nate Schmidt, right? They've lost quite a few players. But this is still top to bottom, I think, one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, maybe still a top five team in the entire league. So if you were writing off Alexander Ovechkin, obviously you haven't watched him play that much. This is a guy that's, to me, already a Hall of Famer. He's an unbelievable goal scorer, probably the best goal scorer of his era, I would say. And obviously Patrick Laine is an up-and-coming young goal
Different
scorer.
Different eras, though,
right.
I would suggest.
But until he has a 65-goal season, he's not in the Alex Ovechkin category, and Laine might get there. I wouldn't be surprised. So, I mean, I am not surprised at all. Maybe a little bit surprised that he has 9 goals in 5 games, but yeah. It's Ovechkin we're talking about here, guys. I mean, this is a guy that scored 50 goals how many times? 8, 9 times in his career? So, I mean, this is a guy that, you expect to score almost every night. And again, you don't expect him to get a hat trick in the first 2 games, maybe, but you kind of do, actually. So, it's great to see Ovechkin playing really well, and it's great to see the Caps playing well.
Dave, could you see 50 goals in 50 games for Alex Ovechkin? That's a benchmark that hasn't been accomplished since, I think, Brett Hull back in 92, 93, if I'm not mistaken. Could you see 50 and 50, or is it just almost – it's just not realistic that that's ever going to happen in this day and age in the NHL?
Well, I think maybe Connor McDavid, if he decides to change up his game. And
Crosby never even did it, though.
No, that's true. That's true. I mean, look, I mean, it's
when was the last time it was done? 20 years?
I was going to say,
91, 92, yeah. Brett Hull did 50 and 50.
Yeah, it's a different era, so I suspect we probably won't see that again. But, Ovechkin is off to quite the start, but I suspect he'll cool off a little bit.
And if anybody could do it, it would be Ovechkin, right? And it goes back to what we were talking about last year, Dave, on the show, when Ovechkin and Crosby were hitting 1,000 points. Ovechkin rarely misses a game. If you look, go on HockeyDB, on NHL.com, whatever you want.
He's missed eight games over the last 4 seasons.
I think he's missed something like 20 or 30 games in his entire career, Drew.
Yeah.
He's a workhorse.
Fewest games he's played was 72 games, forgetting about the strike shortened the year, lockout year.
And he played every game that year.
He did. He missed 10 games in 09-10. That's the most he's ever missed in
his
career.
Well, just look at I've got it up here. Look at his last 4 seasons, 78, 81, 79, 82. And Ovechkin's a guy that has that physical element to his game.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
He's certainly not shy about putting his body out there.
So 50 and 50, I don't think that's going to happen. Maybe it does, but I think he's definitely going to score 50 and 82.
Oh, yeah. Well, so far with nine goals in your first 5 games, it seems likely that you almost have to fall, assuming he's healthy, which all indications are he'll continue to be healthy, because he's historically been a healthy player. You almost fall ass backwards into 50 goals in 82 games when you got 9 and 5.
And Drew, also something to mention too is Ovechkin scoring all these good goals, pardon me, is good for the NHL, right? It's good for hockey.
Storylines.
The NHL wants more goals, right? Gary Bettman, Bill Daly, they want lots of goals. They want lots of power play goals. And nobody's scoring more than Ovi right now.
Well, and the question, and we've talked about this on the show, is it possible that he could beat Wayne Gretzky's 894 career goals?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because I crunched the numbers, and I think I had Ovechkin finishing his career around 800 to 850 career goals because he's able to stay healthy. Mm-hmm. I had Crosby scoring more points throughout his career, but Crosby has the health concerns, right? So I think there's no doubt that Ovechkin's going to hit 700 goals. I mean, he's already at, 560, 565?
567. 567.
There you go. So he might hit 600 this year. He's definitely going to hit 700. The question is he going to hit 800?
Well, I mean, 800's a big number. I mean, 894 is even a bigger number. He basically has to average 35 to 40 goals a season until he's 40 years old to have a realistic shot at breaking Gretzky's record.
He could do it.
Well, I mean, there's only one player that we're talking about as a possibility of doing it right now, and that's Ovechkin.
Right.
And to do it in this era, it's a big number, and that's, another 8 years from now. It's hard to believe that he's going to continue to put up 40 goals a season for the next 8 years. It's in the realm of a conversation, so it's not the most outrageous thing we've ever talked about on the show.
One thing is for sure, nobody's ever touching that points record.
No, the points record is definitely not.
No one's ever going to come close to that. As far as goals,
Connor McDavid gets pretty good.
No, he's not getting close.
Until he starts putting up 215 points a season, I don't think that's going to happen. But when you're talking about goals, I mean, I think you could argue that Ovechkin might be the greatest pure goal scorer of all time. Really, I think you can. And you look at his numbers. I mean, in this day and age, to score 50 goals year after year,
yeah.
I mean, put Ovechkin in the 1980s. He's probably getting 80 or 90 a year.
Oh yeah, he would have 100. He would have torn it up. Yeah. It would have been unbelievable to watch Ovechkin in the defenseless era.
I love watching Ovechkin play maybe more than any other player in the league sometimes. You know, his release and his compete level as well. And I realize that's a cliche word or words, but man, is he a good goal scorer.
Well, he also, as you touched on, he doesn't shy away from the physical contact. And you see Patrick Laine, who models his game after Alexander Ovechkin, do similar things. They finish their checks. A lot of, you know, these pure goal scorers or these more, you know, talented players have a tendency to shy away from that physical contact. And Ovechkin has shown throughout his career he doesn't do it. And Patrick Laine from the Jets, you see him. He's a guy who doesn't – he's not afraid to finish his checks.
No, well, you're that big. You should hopefully not be afraid of the physicality when you're 6'5", something like that.
Drew, Ovechkin's got 750 goal years, but when you consider that he scored 32 in the short lockout season, he really has eight. Well, he'll probably get his ninth 50. This year. So
yeah, he's an incredible goal scorer. Worth noting that the interesting anniversary, 39 years ago today, Wayne Gretzky made his professional hockey debut with the Indianapolis Racers of the World Hockey Association. So there you go. There's a little trivia for you.
Did he play backgammon that day?
No, that was later on the backgammon that cost it. You know, that, of course, has been debunked since then, but it's certainly a good NHL sort of fable about the idea that Wayne Gretzky was that close to being a Winnipeg Jet. He was. The team just chose not to go with him. The scouts thought he was too small.
Let's not go there, Drew.
It's a little painful, isn't it? In this day and age, still a little painful. When we come back, we're going to be joined by James O'Brien from NBC's Pro Hockey Talk. We'll look around the league through the first week to 10 days of the season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.